Chapter 10. Temporary Abatement of Religious Attention, Letter to M.R. Bellamy, Missionary Tour, Success at Leicester, M.R. Hopkins becomes a member of his family, M.R. Buell's successful labors at Northampton, M.R. Edwards's narrative of the revival at Northampton, in 1740-1742, covenant entered into by the church. For about 3 months, or from November to January, there was an obvious abatement in the attention to religion at Northampton. And although there were instances of conversion from time to time through the winter, yet they were less frequent than before. Mr. Edwards alludes to this fact in the following letter to Mr. Bellamy, of Bethlehem. Northampton, January 21, 1742. Rev. and Dear Sir, I received yours of January 11th, for which I thank you. Religion, in this and the neighboring towns, has now of late been on the decaying hand. I desire your prayers, that God would quicken and revive us again, and particularly, that he would greatly humble, and pardon, and quicken me, and fill me with his own fullness. And, if it may consist with his will, improve me as an instrument to revive his work. There has been, the year past, the most wonderful work among children here, by far, that ever was. God has seemed almost wholly to take a new generation that are come on since the late great work, 7 years ago. Neither earth nor hell can hinder his work that is going on in the country. Christ gloriously triumphs at this day. You have probably before now heard of the great and wonderful things that have lately been wrought at Portsmouth, the chief town in New Hampshire. There are also appearing great things at Ipswich and Newbury, the two largest towns in this province except Boston, and several other towns beyond Boston, and some towns nearer. By what I can understand, the work of God is greater at this day in the land than it has been at any time. Oh, what cause have we, with exulting hearts, to agree to give glory to him who thus rides forth in the chariot of his salvation, conquering and to conquer, and earnestly to pray that now the Son of Righteousness would come forth like a bridegroom, rejoicing as a giant, to run his race from one end of the heavens to the other, that nothing may be hid from the light and heat thereof. It is not probable that I shall be able to attend your meeting at Guildford. I have lately been so much gone from my people, and don't know but I must be obliged to leave M again next week about a fortnight, being called to Leicester, a town about halfway to Boston, where a great work of grace has lately commenced, and probably soon after that to another place, and having at this time some extraordinary affairs to attend to at home. I pray that Christ, our good shepherd, will be with you, and direct you and greatly strengthen and bless you. Dear sir, I have none of those books you speak of to sell. I have only a few that I intend to send to some of my friends. I have already sent you one of my New Haven sermons by M.R. Nevertheless, I have herewith sent another, which I desire you to give to Mr. Mills, if he has none. But if he has, dispose of it where you think it will do most good. I have also sent one of those sermons I preached at Enfield. As to the other, I have but one of them in the world. I am, dear sir, your affectionate and unworthy brother, and fellow laborer, Jonathan Edwards. The absence from his people, alluded to in the preceding letter, occurred in consequence of a missionary tour of some length, in the two preceding months, during which he visited various places, to which he had been invited, in consequence of an unusual attention to religion there, among the people. His own congregation, readily admitting that, at such a time, there was a louder call for his services in those places than in Northampton, consented, in the true spirit of Christian benevolence, that he should listen to these calls of Providence and go forth into other fields of labor. In so doing, they soon found a fulfillment of the promise that he who waitereth shall be watered himself. On Monday, the 25th of January, M.R. Edwards set out for Leicester and remained there several weeks, preaching with remarkable success. The revival of religion almost immediately pervaded the whole congregation, and great numbers were believed to be the subjects of hopeful conversion. On Wednesday, January 27, Mr. Buell, a classmate of Mr. Hopkins, who, though he left college in the September preceding, had already been preaching some time, and had gained the reputation of an uncommonly engaged and animated preacher, came to Northampton to preach during the absence of Mr. Edwards. immediately the work of grace, which had for a season declined, was again carried on with even greater power than before. A high degree of religious feeling was excited in the church. A solemn, anxious attention to the salvation of the soul was witnessed extensively among the congregation. And, soon after the return of M. R. Edwards, the work of conviction and conversion again went forward with renewed success. Mr. Hopkins alludes to these events in his own narrative. In the month of December, he observes, "Being furnished with a horse, I set out for Northampton, with a view to live with Mr. Edwards, where I was an utter stranger. When I arrived there, Mr. Edwards was not at home. But I was received with great kindness by Mrs. Edwards and the family, and had encouragement that I might live there during the winter. Mr. Edwards was absent on a preaching tour, as people in general were greatly attentive to religion and preaching, which was attended with remarkable effects, in the conviction and supposed conversion of multitudes. I was very gloomy, and was most of the time retired in my chamber. After some days, Mrs. Edwards came into my chamber, and said, as I was now become a member of the family for a season, she felt herself interested in my welfare. And, as she observed that I appeared gloomy and dejected, she hoped I would not think she intruded, by her desiring to know, and asking me what was the occasion of it, or to that purpose. I told her the freedom she used was agreeable to me. That the occasion of the appearance which she mentioned, was the state in which I considered myself. I was in a Christless, graceless state, and had been under a degree of conviction and concern for myself, for a number of months. Had got no relief, and my case, instead of growing better, appeared to grow worse. Upon which we entered into a free conversation. And on the whole she told me, that she had peculiar exercises in prayer respecting me, since I had been in the family. That she trusted I should receive light and comfort, and doubted not that God intended yet to do great things by me. Religion was now at a lower ebb at Northampton than it had been of late, and than it appeared to be in the neighboring towns, and in New England in general. In the month of January, Mr. Buell, my classmate, came to Northampton, having commenced a zealous preacher of the gospel, and was the means of greatly reviving the people to zeal in religion. He preached every day, and sometimes twice a day, publicly, Mr. Edwards being out of town, preaching in distant towns. Professing Christians appeared greatly revived and comforted, and a number were under conviction, and I think there were some hopeful new converts. After Mr. Buell had been in Northampton a week or two, he set out on a tour towards Boston 23. Having thus alluded to the religious state of Northampton at this period, so far as was necessary to exhibit the order and connection of events, we now proceed to give Mr. Edwards's own account of the revival of religion in that town, in 1740-1742, as communicated in a letter to a minister of Boston. Northampton, December 12, 1743. Rev. and Dear Sir, ever since the great work of God that was wrought here about 9 years ago, there has been a great and abiding alteration in this town, in many respects. There has been vastly more religion kept up in the town, among all sorts of persons, in religious exercises, and in common conversation. There has been a great alteration among the youth of the town, with respect to revelry, frolicking, profane and licentious conversation, and lewd songs. And there has also been a great alteration, amongst both old and young, with regard to tavern haunting. I suppose the town has been in no measure so free of vice in these respects, for any long time together, for 60 years, as it has been these 9 years past. There has also been an evident alteration, with respect to a charitable spirit to the poor. Though I think with regard to this, we in this town, as well as the land in general, come far short of gospel rules. And though after that great work 9 years ago, there has been a very lamentable decay of religious affections, and the engagedness of people's spirit in religion, yet many societies for prayer and social worship were all along kept up, and there were some few instances of awakening, and deep concern about the things of another world, even in the most dead time. In the year 1740, in the spring before Mr. Whitefield came to this town, there was a visible alteration. There was more seriousness in religious conversation, especially among young people. Those things that were of ill tendency among them were forborne. And it was a very frequent thing for persons to consult their minister upon the salvation of their souls. And in some particular persons there appeared a great attention about that time. And thus it continued until Mr. Whitefield came to town, which was about the middle of October following. He preached here 4 sermons in the meeting house, besides a private lecture at my house, one on Friday, another on Saturday, and 2 upon the Sabbath. The congregation was extraordinarily melted by every sermon, almost the whole assembly being in tears for a great part of sermon time. Mr. Whitefield's sermons were suitable to the circumstances of the town, containing a just reproof of our backslidings, and in a most moving and affecting manner, making use of our great professions and great mercies as arguments with us to return to God, from whom we had departed. Immediately after this, the minds of the people in general appeared more engaged in religion, showing a greater forwardness to make religion the subject of their conversation, and to meet frequently for religious purposes, and to embrace all opportunities to hear the word preached. The revival at first appeared chiefly among professors, and those that had entertained hope that they were in a state of salvation, to whom Mr. Whitefield chiefly addressed himself. But in a very short time, there appeared an awakening and deep concern among some young persons that looked upon themselves in a Christless state. And there were some hopeful appearances of conversion, and some professors were greatly revived. In about a month or 6 weeks, there was a great attention in the town, both as to the revival of professors and the awakening of others. By the middle of December, a considerable work of God appeared among those that were very young. And the revival of religion continued to increase, so that in the spring an engagedness of spirit about the things of religion was become very general amongst young people and children, and religious subjects almost wholly took up their conversation when they were together. In the month of May, 1741, a sermon was preached to a company at a private house. Near the conclusion of the discourse, one or two persons that were professors were so greatly affected with a sense of the greatness and glory of divine things, and the infinite importance of the things of eternity, that they were not able to conceal it, the affection of their minds overcoming their strength, and having a very visible effect upon their bodies. When the exercises were over, the young people that were present removed into the other room for religious conference, and particularly that they might have opportunity to inquire those that were thus affected, what apprehensions they had, and what things they were that thus deeply impressed their minds. And there soon appeared a very great effect of their conversation. The affection was quickly propagated throughout the room. Many of the young people and children that were professors appeared to be overcome with a sense of the greatness and glory of divine things, and with admiration, love, joy, and praise, and compassion to others that looked upon themselves as in a state of nature. And many others at the same time were overcome with distress about their sinful and miserable estate and condition, so that the whole room was full of nothing but outcries, faintings, and the like. Others soon heard of it in several parts of the town, and came to them. And what they saw and heard there was greatly affecting to them, so that many of them were overpowered in like manner, and it continued thus for some hours, the time being spent in prayer, singing, counseling, and conferring. There seemed to be a consequent happy effect of that meeting to several particular persons, and on the state of religion in the town in general. After this, were meetings from time to time, attended with like appearances. But a little after it, at the conclusion of the public exercises on the Sabbath, I appointed the children that were under 17 years of age to go from the meeting house to a neighboring house, that I might there further enforce what they had heard in public, and might give in some counsels proper for their age. The children were there very generally and greatly affected with the warnings and counsels that were given them, and many exceedingly overcome. And the room was filled with cries. And when they were dismissed, they almost all of them went home crying aloud through the streets, to all parts of the town. The like appearances attended several such meetings of children that were appointed. But their affections appeared by what followed to be of a very different nature in many. They appeared indeed but childish affections, and in a day or two would leave them as they were before. Others were deeply impressed. Their convictions took fast hold of them, and abode by them, and there were some that, from one meeting to another, seemed extraordinarily affected for some time, to but little purpose, their affections presently vanishing from time to time. But yet afterwards, were seized with abiding convictions, and their affections became durable. About the middle of the summer, I called together the young people that were communicants, from 16 to 26 years of age, to my house. Which proved to be a most happy meeting. Many seemed to be very greatly and most agreeably affected with those views, which excited humility, self-condemnation, self-abhorrence, love, and joy. Many fainted under these affections. We had several meetings that summer, of young people, attended with like appearances. It was about that time, that there first began to be cryings out in the meeting house, which several times occasioned many of the congregation to stay in the house after the public exercises were over, to confer with those who seemed to be overcome with religious convictions and affections, which was found to tend much to the propagation of their impressions, with lasting effect upon many. Conference being, at these times, commonly joined with prayer and singing. In the summer and autumn, the children in various parts of the town had religious meetings by themselves, for prayer, sometimes joined with fasting, wherein many of them seemed to be greatly and properly affected, and I hope some of them savingly wrought upon. The months of August and September were the most remarkable of any this year, for appearances of the conviction and conversion of sinners, and great revivings, quickenings, and comforts of professors, and for extraordinary external effects of these things. It was a very frequent thing, to see a house full of outcries, faintings, convulsions, and such like, both with distress, and also with admiration and joy. It was not the manner here, to hold meetings all night, as in some places, nor was it common to continue them till very late in the night. But it was pretty often so, that there were some that were so affected, and their bodies so overcome, that they could not go home, but were obliged to stay all night where they were. There was no difference, that I know of here, with regard to these extraordinary effects, in meetings in the night and in the daytime. The meetings in which these effects appeared in the evening, being commonly begun, and their extraordinary effects, in the day, and continued in the evening. And some meetings have been very remarkable for such extraordinary effects, that were both begun and finished in the daytime. There was an appearance of a glorious progress of the work of God upon the hearts of sinners, in conviction and conversion, the summer and autumn, and great numbers, I think we have reason to hope, were brought savingly home to Christ. But this was remarkable. The work of good in his influences of this nature seemed to be almost wholly upon a new generation, those that were not come to years of discretion in that wonderful season, 9 years ago. Children, or those that were then children, others, who had enjoyed that former glorious opportunity, without any appearance of saving benefit, seemed now to be almost wholly passed over and let alone. But now we had the most wonderful work among children that ever was in Northampton. The former outpouring of the Spirit was remarkable for influences upon the minds of children, beyond all that had ever been before. But this far exceeded that. Indeed, as to influences on the minds of professors, this work was by no means confined to a new generation. Many, of all ages, partook of it. But yet, in this respect, it was more general on those that were of the young sort. Many, who had been formerly wrought upon, and in the time of our declension had fallen into decays, and had in a great measure left God, and gone after the world, now passed under a very remarkable new work of the Spirit of God, as if they had been the subjects of a second conversion. They were first led into the wilderness, and had a work of conviction, having much deeper convictions of the sins of both nature and practice, than ever before. Though with some new circumstances, and something new in the kind of conviction in some, with great distress, beyond what they had felt before their first conversion. Under these convictions, they were excited to strive for salvation, and the kingdom of heaven suffered violence from some of them, in a far more remarkable manner than before. And after great convictions and humblings, and agonizing with God, they had Christ discovered to them anew, as an all-sufficient Savior, and in the glories of His grace, and in a far more clear manner than before. And with greater humility, self-emptiness, and brokenness of heart, and a pure, a higher joy, and greater desires after holiness of life, but with greater self-diffidence and distrust of their treacherous hearts. one circumstance, wherein this work differed from that which had been in the towns 5 or 6 years before, was that conversions were frequently wrought more sensibly and visibly, the impression stronger and more manifest by their external effects, the progress of the Spirit of God and conviction, from step to step, more apparent, and the transition from one state to another, more sensible and plain, so that it might, in many instances, be as it were seen by bystanders. The preceding season had been very remarkable on this account, beyond what had been before. But this more remarkable than that, and in this season, these apparent or visible conversions, if I may so call them, were more frequently in the presence of others, at religious meetings, where the appearances of what was wrought on the heart fell under public observation. After September, 1741, there seemed to be some abatement of these extraordinary appearances, yet they did not wholly cease, but there was something of them, from time to time, all winter. About the beginning of February, 1742, Mr. Buell came to this town. I was then absent from home, and continued so till about a fortnight after. Mr. Buell preached from day to day, almost every day, in the meeting house. I had left him the free use of my pulpit, having heard of his designed visit, before I went from home. He spent almost the whole time religious exercises with the people, either in public or private, the people continually thronging him. When he first came, there came with him a number of the zealous people from Suffield, who continued here for some time. There were very extraordinary effects of M.R. Buell's labors. The people were exceedingly moved, crying out in great numbers in the meeting house, and a great part of the congregation commonly staying in the house of God, for hours after the public service. Many also were exceedingly moved in private meetings, where Mr. Buell was almost the whole town seemed to be in a great and continual commotion, day and night, and there was indeed a very great revival of religion. But it was principally among professors. The appearances of a work of conversion were in no measure as great as they had been the summer before. When I came home, I found the town in very extraordinary circumstances, such as, in some respects, I never saw it in before. Mr. Buell continued here a fortnight or 3 weeks after I returned, there being still great appearances attending his labors, many in their religious affections being raised far beyond what they had ever been before, and there were some instances of persons lying in a sort of trance, remaining perhaps for a whole 24 hours motionless, and with their senses locked up, but in the meantime under strong imaginations, as though they went to heaven, and had there a vision of glorious and delightful objects. But when the people were raised to this height, Satan took the advantage, and his interposition, in many instances, soon became very apparent, and a great deal of caution and pains were found necessary to keep the people, many of them, from running wild. In the month of March, I led the people into a solemn public renewal of their covenant with God. To that end, having made a draft of a covenant, I first proposed it to some of the principal men in the church, then to the people, in their several religious associations in various parts of the town, then to the whole congregation in public, and then I deposited a copy of it in the hands of each of the 4 deacons, that all who desired it might resort to them, and have opportunity to view and consider it. Then the people in general, that were above 14 years of age, first subscribed the covenant with their hands. And then, on a day of fasting and prayer, all together presented themselves before the Lord in his house, and stood up, and solemnly manifested their consent to it, as their vow to God. The covenant was as follows. Copy of a covenant. Entered into and subscribed, by the people of God at Northampton, and owned before God in his house as their vow to the Lord, and made a solemn act of public worship, by the congregation in general that were above 14 years of age, on a day of fasting and prayer for the continuance and increase of the gracious presence of God in that place. March 16, 1742. Acknowledging God's great goodness to us, a sinful, unworthy people, in the blessed manifestations and fruits of His gracious presence in this town, both formerly and lately, and particularly in the very late spiritual revival, and adoring the glorious majesty, power, and grace of God, manifested in the present wonderful outpouring of His Spirit, in many parts of this land, in this place, and lamenting our past backslidings and ungrateful departings from God, and humbly begging of God that He would not mark our iniquities, but, for Christ's sake, come over the mountains of our sins, and visit us with His salvation, and continue the tokens of His presence with us, and yet more gloriously pour out His blessed Spirit upon us, and make us all partakers of the divine blessings He is, at this day, bestowing here, and in many parts of this land. We do this day present ourselves before the Lord, to renounce our evil ways. We put away our abominations from before God's eyes, and with one accord, to renew our engagements to seek and serve God, and particularly do now solemnly promise and vow to the Lord as follows. In all our conversation, concerns, and dealings with our neighbor, we will have a strict regard to rules of honesty, justice, and uprightness, that we don't overreach or defraud our neighbor in any matter, and either willfully, or through want of care, injure him in any of his honest possessions or rights. And in all our communication we'll have a tender respect, not only to our own interest, but also to the interest of our neighbor. And we'll carefully endeavor, in everything, to do to others as we should expect, or think reasonable, that they should do to us, if we were in their case, and they in ours. And particularly we will endeavor to render everyone his due, and will take heed to ourselves, that we don't injure our neighbor, and give him just cause of offense, by willfully or negligently forbearing to pay our honest debts. And wherein any of us, upon strict examination of our past behavior, may be conscious to ourselves, that we have by any means wronged any of our neighbors in their outward estate, we will not rest, till we have made that restitution, or given that satisfaction, which the rules of moral equity require. Or if we are, on a strict and impartial search, conscious to ourselves, that we have in any other respect considerably injured our neighbor, we will truly endeavor to do that, which we in our consciences suppose Christian rules require, in order to a reparation of the injury, and removing the offense given thereby. And furthermore we promise, that we will not allow ourselves in backbiting, and that we will take great heed to ourselves to avoid all violations of those Christian rules, Titus 3:2. Speak evil of no man. James 4:11. Speak not evil one of another, brethren. And 2 Corinthians 12:20. Let there be no strifes, backbitings, whisperings. And that we will not only not slander our neighbor, but also will not feed a spirit of bitterness, ill will, or secret grudge against our neighbor, insist on his real faults needlessly, and when not called to it, or from such a spirit, speak of his failings and blemishes with ridicule, or an air of contempt. And we promise, that we will be very careful to avoid doing anything to our neighbor from a spirit of revenge. And that we will take great care that we do not, for private interest or our own honor, or to maintain ourselves against those of a contrary party, or to get our wills, or to promote any design in opposition to others, do those things which we, on the most impartial consideration are capable of, can think in our consciences will tend to wound religion, and the interests of Christ's kingdom. And particularly, that so far as any of us, by divine providence, have any special influence upon others, to lead them in the management of public affairs, we will not make our own worldly gain, or honor, or interest in the affections of others, or getting the better of any of a contrary party, that are in any respect our competitors, or the bringing or keeping them down, our governing aim, to the prejudice of the interest of religion, and the honor of Christ. And in the management of any public affair, wherever there is a difference of opinions, concerning any outward possessions, privileges, rights, or properties, we will not willingly violate justice for private interest and with the greatest strictness and watchfulness, will avoid all unchristian bitterness, vehemence, and heat of spirit. Yea, though we should think ourselves injured by a contrary party. And in the time of the management of such affairs, we'll especially watch over ourselves, our spirits, and our tongues, to avoid all unchristian envyings, reproachings, bitter reflecting, judging and ridiculing others, either in public meetings or in private conversation, either to men's faces, or behind their backs. But we'll greatly endeavor, so far as we are concerned, that all should be managed with Christian humility, gentleness, quietness, and love. And furthermore we promise, that we will not tolerate the exercise of enmity and ill will, or revenge in our hearts, against any of our neighbors. And we will often be strictly searching and examining our own hearts with respect to that matter. And if any of us find that we have an old secret grudge against any of our neighbors, we will not gratify it, but cross it, and endeavor to our utmost to root it out, crying to God for His help. And that we will make it our true and faithful endeavor, in our places, that a party spirit may not be kept up amongst us, but that it may utterly cease. That for the future, we may all be one, united in undisturbed peace and unfeigned love. And those of us that are in youth, do promise, never to allow ourselves in any diversions or pastimes, in meetings, or companies of young people, that we, in our consciences, upon sober consideration, judge not well to consist with, or would sinfully tend to enter, the devoutest and most engaged spirit in religion, or indispose the mind for that devout and profitable attendance on the duties of the closet, which is most agreeable to God's will, or that we, in our most impartial judgment, can think tends to rob God of that honor which He expects, by our orderly serious attendance on family worship. And furthermore we promise, that we will strictly avoid all freedoms and familiarities in company, so tending either to stir up or gratify a lust of lasciviousness, that we cannot in our consciences think will be approved by the infinitely pure and holy eye of God, or that we can think, on serious and impartial consideration, we should be afraid to practice, if we expected in a few hours to appear before that holy God, to give an account of ourselves to Him, as fearing they would be condemned by Him as unlawful and impure. We also promise, with great watchfulness, to perform relative duties, required by Christian rules, in the families we belong to, as we stand related respectively, towards parents and children, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, masters or mistresses, and servants. And we now appear before God, depending on divine grace and assistance, solemnly to devote our whole lives, to be laboriously spent in the business of religion. Ever making it our greatest business, without backsliding from such a way of living, not hearkening to the solicitations of our sloth, and other corrupt inclinations, or the temptations of the world, that tend to draw us off from it. And particularly, that we will not abuse a hope or opinion that any of us may have, of our being interested in Christ, to indulge ourselves in sloth, or the more easily to yield to the solicitations of any sinful inclinations. But we'll run with perseverance the race that is set before us, and work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. And because we are sensible that the keeping these solemn vows may hereafter, in many cases, be very contrary to our corrupt inclinations and carnal interests, we do now therefore appear before God to make a surrender of all to Him, and to make a sacrifice of every carnal inclination and interest, to the great business of religion and the interest of our souls. And being sensible of our weakness, and the deceitfulness of our own hearts, and our proneness to forget our most solemn vows, and lose our resolutions, we promise to be often strictly examining ourselves by these promises, especially before the sacrament of the Lord's Supper. And beg of God that He would, for Christ's sake, keep us from wickedly dissembling in these our solemn vows. And that He who searches our hearts, and ponders the path of our feet, would, from time to time, help us in trying ourselves by this covenant, and help us to keep covenant with Him, and not leave us to our own foolish, wicked, and treacherous hearts. In the beginning of the summer of 1742, there seemed to be an abatement of the liveliness of people's affections in religion. But yet many were often in a great height of them. And in the fall and winter following, there were at times extraordinary appearances. But in the general, people's engagedness in religion, and the liveliness of their affections, have been on the decline. And some of the young people especially, have shamefully lost their liveliness and vigor in religion, and much of the seriousness and solemnity of their spirits. But there are many that walk as becometh saints. And to this day there are a considerable number in town that seem to be near to God, and maintain much of the life of religion, and enjoy many of the sensible tokens and fruits of His gracious presence. With respect to the late season of revival of religion amongst us for 3 or 4 years past, it has been observable, that in the former part of it, in the years 1740 and 1741, the work seemed to be much more pure, having less of a corrupt mixture than in the former great outpouring of the Spirit, in 1735 and 1736. Persons seemed to be sensible of their former errors, and had learned more of their own hearts, and experience had taught them more of the tendency and consequences of things. They were now better guarded, and their affections were not only stronger, but attended with greater solemnity, and greater humility and self-distrust, and greater engagedness after holy living and perseverance, and there were fewer errors in conduct. But in the latter part of it, in the year 1742, it was otherwise. The work continued more pure till we were infected from abroad, our people hearing of, and some of them seeing, the work in other places, where there was greater visible commotion than here, and the outward appearances were more extraordinary, were ready to think that the work in those places far excelled what was amongst us, and their eyes were dazzled with the high profession and great show that some made, who came hither from other places. That those people went so far beyond them in raptures and violent emotions of the affections, and a vehement zeal, and what they call boldness for Christ, our people were ready to think was owing to far greater attainments in grace, and intimacy with heaven. They looked little in their own eyes in comparison with them, and were ready to submit themselves to them, and yield themselves up to their conduct, taking it for granted, that everything was right that they said and did. These things had a strange influence on the people, and gave many of them a deep and unhappy tincture, from which it was a hard and long labor to deliver them, and from which some of them are not fully delivered to this day. The effects and consequences of things among us plainly show the following things, namely, that the degree of grace is by no means to be judged of by the degree of joy, or the degree of zeal. And that indeed we cannot at all determine by these things, who are gracious and who are not. And that it is not the degree of religious affections, but the nature of them, that is chiefly to be looked at. Some that have had very great raptures of joy, and have been extraordinarily filled, as the vulgar phrase is, and have had their bodies overcome, and that very often, have manifested far less of the temper of Christians in their conduct since, than some others that have been still, and have made no great outward show. But then again, there are many others, that have had extraordinary joys and emotions of mind, with frequent great effects upon their bodies, that behave themselves steadfastly, as humble, amiable, eminent Christians. 'Tis evident that there may be great religious affections in individuals, which may and show an appearance resemble gracious affections, and have the same effects upon their bodies, but are far from having the same effect on the temper of their minds and the course of their lives. And likewise there is nothing more manifest, by what appears amongst us, than that the good estate of individuals is not chiefly to be judged of by any exactness of steps, and method of experiences, in what is supposed to be the first conversion. But that we must judge by the spirit that breathes, the effect wrought upon the temper of the soul in the time of the work and remaining afterwards. Though there have been very few instances among professors, amongst us, of what is ordinarily called scandalous sins, known to me, yet the temper that some of them show, and the behavior they have been of, together with some things in the nature and circumstances of their experiences, make me much afraid lest there be a considerable number that have woefully deceived themselves. Though, on the other hand, there is a great number whose temper and conversation is such, as justly confirms the charity others towards them. And not a few, in whose disposition and walk there are amiable appearances of eminent grace. And notwithstanding all the corrupt mixtures that have been in the late work here, there are not only many blessed fruits of it, in particular persons that yet remain, but some good effects of it upon the town in general. A spirit of party has more extensively subsided. I suppose there has been less appearance these 3 or 4 years past, of that division of the town into two parties, which has long been our bane, than has been at any time during the preceding 30 years. And the people have apparently had much more caution, and a greater guard on their spirit and their tongues, to avoid contention and unchristian heats, in town meetings, and on other occasions. And 'tis a thing greatly to be rejoiced in, that the people very lately came to an agreement and final issue, with respect to their grand controversy relating to their common lands, which has been, above any other particular thing, a source of mutual prejudices, jealousies, and debates, for 15 or 16 years past. The people also seem to be much more sensible of the danger of resting in old experiences, or what they were subjects of at their supposed first conversion, and to be more fully convinced of the necessity of forgetting the things that are behind, and pressing forward and maintaining earnest labor, watchfulness, and prayerfulness, as long as they live. I am, Revelation Sir, your friend and brother. Jonathan Edwards.